keep your comments brief. We maybe have about 20, 25 minutes together, but I'll move the microphone around and
raise your hand if you have a question.
My name is Haskell Whirlin. I live in Jamaica Plain now 36 years. I don't know what better place on the planet to live. I spent this week in the State House. I witnessed two things. I witnessed the lack of democracy in the House of Representatives. I saw a vote 150-2, everybody siding with a speaker. I feel like I live in Moscow on the Charles. How do we stop this?
Anybody want to respond to that, or you can also inject a few other comments into the mix?
Let's build a few up.
Okay, yeah, other people have a question or comment?
Well, this is a question from Marlo. How do you kind of fail better in place at your office, at your home, at the Thanksgiving table? Can you help us figure out how to fail every day?
I can assure you that I do it.
Can I add mine to this mix? I'm Michaela, also in Jamaica Plain. My question is really similar, and I don't know whether it can be answered in 25 minutes. But really having to do with some recent experiences of mine, I love the disruption model that we're talking about here, and I feel fiercely dedicated to the reasons of why this is necessary. And I come from a family and have a lot of people in my life for whom it's simply not an effective, it's not effective for me to come disrupt Thanksgiving dinner. It doesn't work. And so I'm good with bringing up discomfort, but curious to know about any strategies about really engaging. I'm talking about folks who literally don't believe the climate science, you know.
Do they love you?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm going to say if they don't, you don't need them, but I'll start by saying that I am not looking forward to going home for Christmas because my stepbrother is a retired Columbia, Missouri police officer. We'll see how quickly this gets back to the family, where it lands on social media, who is one of the most racist people I've ever met in my life. So stuff that's been happening at Mizzou, I promised my mother I wouldn't fight at Christmas, so I just always have to walk out of the room. I'm gonna spend a lot of time outside at Christmas this year, I think, because they egg me on. For me, I've just learned from my own actions, but also really from watching what happened after Ken and Jay took their action, and then learning about what happened for Tim, because I didn't know him when he took his action, that our actions don't have to be, they're polarizing because they ask people to take a side, but they can be invitational at the same time. And that's really the kind of work that we have said together in the Climate Disobedience Center that we feel called to. And one of the ways I can be more invitational is instead of like preaching at my family, I can just do something that puts me in a pretty vulnerable position and tell them that I did it and tell them why. And not tell them what I think they should do, but let them decide how they're going to land. We found that when people put themselves on the line, people who aren't already in the mix respond really deeply to that kind of personal vulnerability. That it can, it doesn't always, right, but it can cut through that sort of like ideological, like nonsense shitstorm that happens when people just don't hear each other. And instead really humanizes the situation. In terms of failing in place, I left my last job. Some places you can't fail in place forever. You can't fail better. You can't keep failing better and stay where you are. The work that I feel like I finally found my team and the work that feels like my truest home, which means that's the work I need to do. When you find your truest home, keep failing there. And I think until then, I'd say be ready to put that inconvenient tug somewhere else. We like to, when we do this, let other people answer the question that somebody directs at just one of us, if they're called.
Just want to say a quick word in favor of failing. And Marla. I am a failure, in that I started this stupid idea of a program where we put students on bicycles in the summer, and they'd ride around in little groups from town to town, and we called it Climate Summer, and with some idea that these, I don't know what the idea originally was that these students would be doing, but there actually is not enough time tonight for me to elucidate the number of ways that I failed in putting that program together, and that Marla saved my ass. But I ended up having to quit that work because it wasn't mine. And it turned out it was Marla's work. And what happened when I quit is that someone who was infinitely more judicial, infinitely more patient, infinitely better suited to do the work of organizing students for a summer program took over and brought this idea to a place that I never, ever, ever in a million years would have imagined it going. And I think part of the lesson in failing is that we have to be able to give up our illusions of power and control and trust that if the work is meant to be done, that there are people who are well suited to do it. And if it is work that is not meant to be done, we have to let our egos be okay with seeing our precious little ideas disappear. So I am internally grateful that Marla didn't let that idea disappear. But at the end of the day, if it did, that was going to have to be okay too.
I will take that one because being kind of an adopted Utahn, this is my one chance to gloat over all you guys because Utah is the only state with a Republican governor that has welcomed Syrian refugees this week. And the interesting reason for that is that about 2.5 weeks ago, one of the bishops or prophets or something in the Mormon Church released his encyclical about being more welcoming and opening to refugees. And so two Sundays ago, that encyclical was read in every single Mormon ward. And so that was fresh on people's minds when the attacks Friday happened and the resulting xenophobia and paranoia happened was this message that came from their churches of why they should be opening their hearts and opening their homes to refugees. And so it's one of the few ways in which Utah, for the moment, is more progressive than Massachusetts. And so in terms of how you do that here, I do think this is an area where creating that grassroots pressure that refuses to buy into that xenophobia, that paranoia, that willingness to sacrifice our civil liberties in the name of security can really make a difference. And, you know, my first thought when I heard about the attacks on Friday was, oh, this is going to be like another 9/11 kind of excuse for repression of dissent and repression of social movements, and just a that rise of a racist and xenophobic backlash throughout our society, and then over that coming weekend, I realized that I don't think that's true actually, that that we remember what happened after 9/11. We remember all of what was lost in our society in the name of security, and we remember that it didn't actually make us safer. And I don't think people are gonna permit it this time around. That I don't think we're all gonna be silent in the way that people were silent after 9/11, silent in the name of patriotism. I don't think we're gonna buy into that again. And so I think there needs to be backlash for those kind of results from the State House, and it needs to come from the basis of our society. And we're already seeing that, like people that are proud to say refugees welcome, which is the kind of voice of dissent that we didn't hear nearly as much of in the days after 9/11. I do think we're more prepared to resist that pressure at this point, and we just need to raise those voices up.
My high school teacher had a frequent saying, which was, right pew, wrong church. And the church that I belong to is more Christian than this one, and we believe, like Marla, that we're all sinners on our way to saints, to becoming saints. We'll still always be sinners. And my right pew, wrong church question is that how has the Pope's encyclical helped the climate justice movement?
Maybe just hear a couple more comments and then we'll do another round. Let's see. Pass that over.
Well, I kind of wonder if this idea of failing is helpful, because I think of myself as an activist, although I'm not a super activist, I'm not the super organizer. And I think one of the dangers is that you feel this enormity of a problem. And I know that I've felt this myself, that I'm never doing enough. And I want to stop thinking that way. And I want to think, well, I did this, you know, I rode my bike today, or I brought something at the farmer's market today, or I went to the vigil about the pipeline on Monday night. Because if I think that I can only not be a failure, or even if I do what you do, if I go to prison for 2 years, or if I fail at my job and can't hold a regular job and stuff like that, then it can be, to me, kind of uninviting. And if we're trying to get people to join, I wonder if this idea of failure is not helpful. Instead to say, look, everybody came out on Saturday, you know, 400 people or whatever it was that came out on Saturday, great, 400 people came out. And just reframe it that way.
Just hear one more question come and then hear from our panel.
Thank you for the speeches and the information. I think in the last year, it's been actually a year since Stop the West Roxbury Lateral Pipeline campaign, since we actually came up with that swirl name. And I think over the last year, I actually feel hugely optimistic. I feel inspired by the actions of the last couple of months, by the actions of Resist the Pipeline, the Civil Disobedience, and just my thoughts on the last year. I feel a certain amount of justification, particularly in the last week. You know, for the last year, we've been saying that we don't need these pipelines. And now you have the Attorney General, was it yesterday's, you know, issuing the report, the studies saying, well, we don't need these pipelines. So that kind of gives me a little bit of justification. On the issue of, I think, you know, when you go into a struggle, when you go into a battle, you can't tell beforehand whether you're going to succeed or fail. What determines that is the balance of forces. And granted, the balance of forces on the other side are kind of are very large. You're dealing with some of the most powerful institutions and organizations in the world. But I'm inspired by a couple of Irish radicals and socialists, James Connolly and James Larkin. And one thing they said, you know, in their struggles to improve the lives of working people was that they said that the great only seem great because we are on our knees. You know, as soon as we get up off our knees, they don't seem as powerful. I think, you know, what we have achieved over the last year and what West Roxbury and this particular struggle and also the Keystone struggle has shown is that people are looking for an inspiration and beacon. And what we really have to do, and what will determine, you know, if we fail in this particular length of pipeline, I think sometimes failures, you can learn the lessons from them. But what we're building is a social movement and a political movement. And I think, you know, what we can learn from the last year, and what a lot of people have learned is that you learn the lessons of what works, what don't work. I think what we see throughout the state, and particularly over the last few months, is that this movement is growing. And we have to come together, we have to build it, we have to strengthen it, because we have a major battle ahead.
So I'm going to address this point about failure really briefly, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I don't think you heard what any of us meant by that, which means that you're not the only one, and I'm glad for an opportunity to sort of flesh that out a little bit. So I coach volleyball, and volleyball is a game of mistakes. There's no such thing as a perfect game of volleyball. It's not like a 300 in bowling or something. You can't have it. It doesn't happen. And what matters in volleyball is as soon as you make a mistake, like, learn from it, let it go. Don't let it get in your way. Organizing is a game of mistakes. Another way to say that is failures. If we already knew how to fix this shit, we would have just fixed it, right? We would have just, we'd be done. We'd be on to the next thing. We don't know how, right? Nobody knows how. It's not like somebody's sitting somewhere and like feeding us information. We're just really bad at implementing it. We have a lot of ideas and we have to keep trying them. And failure in this sense is like, I wouldn't have actually said that, you know, last Saturday in West Roxbury was a failure. I wouldn't have named that one as a failure at all. Because Spectre went home for the year. But I think a lot of the things we did that got us to that in our organizing, we did. We had a lot of failures. There are a lot of things that we need to do better on that particular effort, but we're learning. It's an iterative process, and it's the best way to learn. Dorian, are you still here? Yeah. Dorian, you might be able to finish this sentence. There might be other people in the room who can. Dorian, the only way you can fail is if you don't try. You got it. This is a climate summer mantra. If there were some of them in the room, we would have gotten it, right? The only way you can fail is if you don't try. So real failure, like where you actually have to feel like a failure, is if you don't try. The other kind of failures are the kinds that we need in order to help us learn and get better at it. And I think it's important for us to understand and to be a little bit nicer to ourselves in the work, a little bit more gentle with ourselves, because we're going to screw up all the time. I screw up all the time every day. And the important thing is that we learn from it when it happens, and we move on, and don't let it get in our way.
And I want to address a different perspective on that, because I heard something different in what you were saying, in that that why don't we just focus on the positive and just talk about what we're doing and like acknowledge that that's enough. And that's I think a critical debate that is happening in the climate movement right now, of whether or not we should just talk about what's going right and talk about what we can do, or whether or not we should talk about what we collectively have failed at, and acknowledge the negative. And I don't think that means just dwelling in the negative and sort of denying like all the stuff that we're actually winning at. But I do think it's critical to acknowledge both of them, because there's a kind of resilience and toughness that I think comes from a regular practice of grappling with the bad news, whether that's our own personal failures or our collective civilizational failures, that I think is going to be necessary moving forward. And that's like I think part of the thing that really gets under my skin about what's going on in Paris right now is that those who are advocating that the movement should just back down and like respect the ban on marches that officials are trying to impose, are kind of saying like, well, this is this is a unique situation and people are stressed out and people are scared, and there's a lot of tension going on, and we just need to step back. And I think, all of that is true, that people are scared and there's tension and stress right now. But I don't think our decisions are going to get any easier. I think that thread of rapidly progressing bad news about the climate science, and it could have added, yesterday we learned that October last month was the hottest month on record, not only the hottest month on record, but the hottest by the largest margin ever on record, by a significant amount. And I think what that tells us is that, like, we're not going to go back to a world of easy decisions. We're not going to go back to that place of stability where there's like an appropriate time to protest or an appropriate time to take a stand. That things are going to keep unraveling, and there's going to continue to be that level of stress and fear. And I think to be able to stand and lead and move forward in that kind of a world takes a practice and a resilience of acknowledging that we have dealt with hard things before, that we have failed before, and that we might make a mistake this time, but we're still going to move forward, we're not going to pretend that we can wash our hands of consequences. Like part of the difficulty of the decision in Paris right now for the climate movement is the very real possibility that if they did try to march next week and did try to challenge that ban, that things could go really badly. Right? Like whether that's the police violence, whether that's terrorist violence, that people could lose their lives in that. And those are big consequences to saying, I think we should march, and there's the risk that people could lose their lives. But we live in an age of consequences in which all of our inactions are also costing people their lives. And every time we choose to not take a stand, it is costing people their lives. And I think that that challenging practice of acknowledging the negative perspectives on this is essential to be able to operate in the real world, and that's really the kind of leadership that we need, and I think particularly what young people are going to need to navigate a world that is going to continue to get more challenging, and I think they're going to have to continue to get tougher and more courageous and more loving and more supportive of one another.
In case of emergency, be quiet. I suspect every one of us here has struggled with this question of not being enough. I am not enough to save the world. I'm not enough to stop this pipeline. I'm sometimes not enough to get out of bed in the morning. And yet, I am utterly convinced that each and every one of us in this room has something that we were born to do, something that we are uniquely suited to accomplish in this world, some piece of loving, powerful truth bearing, witness telling that no one else can bring at a particular time and in a particular moment. And despite the fact that we are going to feel like we are never enough, that in fact the most powerful thing we can do is offer up that one precious gift that we have that's ours. I don't know what it is for you. I don't know what it's going to be for me tomorrow. But I am utterly convinced that if we dig deep and find it in each and every one of us, there are going to be unbelievable powers of hope and renewal unleashed on the world.
Okay. I think it's about time. Yeah.
The bell.
That's the bell. So I'm just going to leave you with this very brief thought. The great Korean Zen master, Songsan, who was my Zen master's teacher, said, "Just try. Trying is better than a Zen master. It's better than God. It's better than Buddha. Try, try, try. 10,000 years non-stop. Get enlightenment. Save all beings from suffering." Easy, right? Thank you.
Before I formally close, I want to thank each of you for coming out. I want to thank the people who volunteered, Terry and Josh and others, Chuck, who does our sound, Ellen Shoup, the best movement photographer in the Boston area. And let's once again, big thanks to our panel, Wen and Jay, Marla and Tim. There is a terrific book here for sale. Think of somebody who might not have been here tonight, who might love this book, a young person. It's still very relevant, by the way, even what Tim said. And I think Gwen would be willing to sign it, inscribe it to someone that you know and love. So thanks again for coming.
Can you mention the 29th, please, Chuck?
Sure. You want to go ahead?
Yeah.
Just one brief announcement about an upcoming climate march.
We will march in Boston on the 29th at 11 o'clock from Harvard Square to the Common. Yes. Please look at peoplesclimatemarch.org. It's happening all around the world. Now that what's going on in Paris is going on, all the support needs to be mustered everywhere. So please look at peoplesclimatemarch.org and please join us at 11 o'clock, Harvard Square, on the 29th. And we will also be marching on the 12th in Boston. You can also find that there and at 350 Mass. Better Future Project. Thank you. Bracketed either side of the event, yes.
You know it's odd that no one's talking about